This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Powered by U Mobile. 5G now with you.
BFM 89.9, I'm Keith Kam. This is The Breakfast Grill. 45 years ago, a German company that specializes in writing equipment established itself in Malaysia. It didn't take them long, just 217 years since it was founded. Faber-Castell started here making natural rubber and PVC erasers, and today is the largest eraser manufacturer in the world. And it also produces high-quality stationery products like ballpoint pens and something I remember very, very fondly from my childhood, color pencils and crayons. Today, this more than two-century-old company is present in more than 120 countries, making more than 2 billion pencils annually. Andrew Woon is the Managing Director of Faber-Castell Malaysia, Indochina and East Asia. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Keith. It's great to be back here, at least physically this time.
Yeah, that's so nice to have you, see you in person. Andrew, you are not new to this fast-moving consumer goods industry. You were with Heineken, Johnson & Johnson and Samsung, if I remember. So when you joined Faber-Castell in 2019, just prior to the pandemic, what was foremost in your mind that needed to be upgraded, bearing in mind that the pandemic hadn't happened yet?
Yeah, right. For me, I think if we look back in my career, I started off with fast-moving consumer goods, packaged goods, and then subsequently into consumer electronics. So there are some similarities in most industries when you talk about packaged goods where you sell into stationery. And then apart from that, there is also a lot of similarities when we look at organizations like that. You will have your regular supply chain. You talk about the retail operations, sales operations. All these are similar. However, in the stationery industry, I would say that it is less fast-moving in some sense. So we find that there's a lot of opportunity to improve some of the key processes internally. On top of that, we also have a factory here. And there was, I think, after examining how we run the operations in the factory, there are a lot of opportunities for us to improve our effectiveness, our quality, and also opportunities to reduce costs as well.
Yeah. What were some of the key things that you saw needed changes and your challenges to implementing those initiatives? I mean, I'm also thinking of the fact that Faber-Castell is a very much established stationery company in Malaysia and in the world, indeed. Mm. The saying is, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it, right?
That's true, right? Okay, if I were to look back in 2019, when I first came, and we go back a bit in history, the founder, the late Dr. Toh, he has been running the organization for 40-plus years here. And Faber-Castell as an organization is quite decentralized. So despite being a global company, you find that a lot of the organizations are running based on their own processes, and not a lot of control from the global or regional side. So that's one big difference in before. However, when I started, I've joined the organization, went through a bit of an organizational change with new CEOs on board, more professional managers, and family, the late count has passed away. So they have put the person in place, the professional managers in place, the CEO, the CFO, and CTO, to run the organization. And then there is a bit of work where we are starting to try to globalize a little bit more and also regionalize a bit more. So when we do that, then you find that firstly in the history previously, there was not a lot of good best practices that it put in place. So when I first came on board, I do a comparison between the initiatives that we want to launch globally, where we look at best practices from the different factories and sales and marketing companies, and at the same time, taking some of the learnings from my previous organizations, because those are really big multinationals, with Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson. So they have a lot of good practices in processes, such as even simple things like forecasting for stocks, optimization, delivery routes, getting the line speed in the factory to run faster, reducing waste and rejection. So there's a lot of things that we can do. And as a result, we know that this is going to be a big step change. So we have to look at, number one, getting the best practices in, but also training the people to upgrade their skills and doing a little bit more analytics than before.
And how did that prepare you guys for what's to come? I mean, the pandemic definitely saw a shift in many things. It's practically been 3 years since the first MCO was imposed, and generally most of us have shifted to a less, I would say, hard copy kind of lifestyle, right? How did Faber-Castell adjust itself?
Okay, well, I guess the pandemic hit us, all of us,
yeah.
Like it was World War II, right? I think nobody was quite prepared for it. We didn't know, and there's a lot of uncertainty. However, I think in some of the preparations that we were making prior to the pandemic, such as trying to digitalize a bit more, and luckily, we also have seen some of the tools like Teams, Zoom being much more prevalent. So that allows us to work from home. So there is at least some semblance of continuity in terms of the workplace. Of course, at the factory side, in the office premises, we have to vacate. So there's some loss of productivity there. However, we do what we can during that time.
What sort of loss of productivity are we talking about? I mean, how badly were you impacted in having to shift? Faber-Castell isn't exactly a digitalized company to start off with, right?
Yes, you could say that. Now, everyone in the office, of course, has got their laptops. We are on Microsoft 365 and all that. However, we also run a factory, and that is a physical work. You have to be present in the factory. And we are not essential goods, basically, during the MCO period. So we are not allowed to operate. So obviously, we can't export and send goods out during that time. At the same time, also, the schools were closed. And therefore, less demand or no demand for these stationery products. So that was one of the changes that we have to do. But nonetheless, because we did not lay off anyone during this period, so we still continue to carry the overhead. So the challenges was more financial. At the same time, we had to grapple with a lot of new safety SOPs to ensure that we keep all our people safe, the vaccination. In fact, I remember when we first started, there was a lot of concern. A lot of people don't want to take the vaccine.
Right.
So we had to do one-to-one and explain and understand from their side what their concerns are, because we've had people who have... some were pregnant or trying to get pregnant. Then we have people who had some diseases. They were concerned. So we addressed all of that. So I think these were some of the challenges we had initially.
So demand dropped to zero during that time. What sort of trends have you seen coming out of the pandemic 3 years in now?
We saw that this also impacted our business partners, the retailers, the wholesalers. And during this time, we see that the... back to school period, the timing of the back to school has been delayed. There's a change in terms of the cycle. So the retailers as well as the wholesalers, number one, during the pandemic period, they were burnt quite a bit because they had to pay their rentals. They didn't have traffic to the store. They had to pay their staff and they had all this inventory in their warehouses, right? So we see that during the pandemic period, they have run down a lot of the inventory. As a result, they are very cautious about taking on new stocks, especially where the back-to-school period was not predictable. The government announced until very late. So there is some hesitation to take on additional stocks. However, with some adjustments, we need several months because the announcement of the new back-to-school date was announced. There was very little reaction time. And we see that right after the announcement, huge demand from all the retailers and wholesalers. They started to take stock back up, right? So, and for us as a company, we also have issues trying to fulfill all the demand because it was a sudden surge. Number one is to backfill all the previous inventory that they had and also to cater the increased demand. So these were some of the challenges that were more supply chain related.
And you guys also export to other countries from Malaysia.
Yes.
What have the trends been like and how do you keep up with the pent-up demand that have returned?
Right. We saw the exports increase surprisingly almost at the same rate domestically. However, I think in the last interview, I mentioned that we saw one trend during the COVID period. We saw in the industrialized countries, for example, in the US, in the European zone, Australia, we see that the coloring products actually grew during the pandemic period because a lot of parents buy these products for their kids so that there is some activity to do at home. However, we saw in the other less developed markets, even in Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, the demand went opposite side because I think less emphasis in the arts and arts area for people. Now, we see that the reverse is happening.
Right.
The demand goes back down for these developed markets for some of the art products. Whereas for us, because school has been reopening, all the demand is coming back up again. So it's a reverse trend that we are seeing right now.
Where would you say Faber-Castell Malaysia is right now in comparison to the pandemic period, are you guys back to full revenue? Have you surpassed the revenue from pre-pandemic times, profits and all that?
Yes. I think we are very happy with what we've been doing the last year, because during the pandemic period, while we were not able to run at full capacity, we've been looking at improving our processes and a lot of cost-saving initiatives, plus also a lot of testing and developing new products. So I think once everything fully opens up, we're actually reaping the benefits of that. I can share some figures. We are roughly about 50% more versus during the pandemic period last year comparison. And versus pre-pandemic period, we are more than double-digit growth versus pre-pandemic, which is very good results for us in Malaysia.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning, we are talking to Andrew Woon, who is the Managing Director of Faber-Castell Malaysia, Indochina and East Asia. On the other side of the break, let's find out how sustainability figures into a company that makes wooden pencils. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile. 5G now with you.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where we are talking to the Managing Director of Faber-Castell Malaysia, Indochina and East Asia, Andrew Woon. Now, Andrew, I want to get into how Faber-Castell distributes products. I see that there are a couple of self-owned stores in Mid-Valley and KLCC, but most are within existing bookshops and established stationers like, you know, Times, MPH and even Chipley. How do you see the future of these physical stores and the kind of challenges we are seeing today?
We have kiosks, and also in the retail side, there are bookstores, right? Like mm-hmm. Popular, MPH, and as you mentioned, Times.
But they're just basically small kiosks within these bookshops.
That's right. That's a little bit more complex. As we see also, we have seen Taiwan mega bookstore type of concept. Yes. It's like they've come into Malaysia. So there could be an evolution in terms of the retail scene on how the stationery and bookstores may progress in the future. However, you're right, in the past, it's more bookstore format, quite not that big in terms of physical size and also the assortment. Nonetheless, if you look at, for example, in Popular, you will see that the products that they carry now have started to vary. You can actually buy electronic products inside. Mm-hmm. Many retailers start to sell COVID items in the past. They have the mask and all that. And also maybe even some food products, which is traditionally not being carried in there. So I think there is some evolution in the bookstore or stationery industry trying to survive in a sense, and also try to get higher basket size of purchases when people are in the store. So that's one part of it. But I think for us, the retail will still be very important, because our products are very analog or tactile. People need to touch, feel, see, right, and get that tactile feeling before they make that purchase. So the touch points of this retail is still going to be very important going forward.
How do you work with your distributors? I mean, the pros and cons of, say, setting up your own outlets versus relying on distributors to do that for you, how does that affect your margins as well?
Okay, so let's talk about the kiosks that we have, as you've seen in KLCC Mid-Valley and also in Sunway Pyramid. The purpose of the kiosk is really to be able to offer most of our consumers the ability to see all our full range of products, which normally sometimes in some of the retail front they don't carry. So, and at the same time, we also provide much more samples so they can actually open up the color pencils or try the pastel colors and all that. So there is at least an ability for them to get closer and personalized with the products. We do not have a high sales expectation for this. It's more for trial. They may actually go and purchase their products from other channels. Could be online and could be in another retail store, but that is fine because the purpose was more experiential for our own stores. However, in the retail stores, of course, right now I can share that for the retail side, that is approximately about 40% of our business, and another 60% of business will go through what we call the wholesalers or dealer network, and they will cater to the smaller mom and pop and in more the outskirt area. So that is the traditional route to market for us.
I'm also curious, maybe it's just a personal thing, but I kind of find it difficult to imagine people going to look for, to buy pencils and pens when they are so freely available when you go visit hotels or to a certain Swedish furniture store. You know, pencils are abundant everywhere. I mean, why would people want to go and purposely spend money, especially in this day and age where you have gadgets as well?
Right. I think, firstly, number one, the price of pencils in comparison to an iPad is way, way different, right? It's a few cents to purchase a pencil. So this is a very quick entry for children, pre-kindergarten and also kindergarten and primary school, to be able to first get their writing experience. Also, I think at the same time, versus some of the free products out there, the quality is quite different. For example, in pencils, for our LEDs, we are making sure that we are looking at the quality of the LED. We want specific darkness and also smoothness when you write so that you don't get this scratchy feeling. And surprising, you may not know that the wood that we use is easier to sharpen versus some of these other competing pencils out there. And finally, the third one is the special type of manufacturing process and the gluing method that enables the pencils to be more break resistant than a traditional pencil. So you don't have a bad experience every time some pencils really you write a bit and it breaks off.
Ah, quality lah.
Yes.
And just to clarify, it's not lead, it's graphite, right, that you guys use, because lead would be poisonous.
That's right.
Let's pivot to going online. Faber-Castell has a presence on the existing online platforms that we have currently. You also have an online store. I wonder if you might be able to paint us a picture on how this evolved for you guys. Did the pandemic force your hand, or was this the plan all along?
We actually launched the store prior to the pandemic, and maybe luckily we did that. So there was always a plan to go online, as that was the trend. We see the marketplaces like Lazada and Shopee getting bigger and bigger. So we need to capture the consumer base that are purchasing there. Nonetheless, the specific size of the online business is still very small to us, because if you look at the purchase price of our items, they are maybe 10 ringgit, 20 ringgit, yeah. But the cost of delivery could be 5 ringgit or 6 ringgit, so it may not make a lot of sense. However, for our own websites, when they purchase about 90 ringgit or 100 ringgit, the delivery is free. So these are more for bigger purchases. And we find that some kindergartens and all that, when they buy products, the teachers would buy in bigger bulks. And we also have corporate customers when they have, like, for example, family day and they want to give some products to the children, then they buy a bigger bulk. Then this is where most of the online purchases come from.
How are you growing this online business segment further? How much are you planning to spend on it?
For us, we think that the online business, it is important for convenience, so that any consumer in any part of Malaysia is able to get 100% of our products if they need so, because they may not be available in some of the retail shops. So it's more of a convenience that we want to make available. As for sales channel, it is not so big for us. We focus more on the brick and mortar retail outlets.
You guys have 16 manufacturing facilities throughout the world. For a 260-year-old company, that's really not a lot, right?
The factories in each of these countries are actually quite specialized. Like in the case of Malaysia, we produce erasers and pens and some text highlighters plus also marker pens. And if you go back into history, Malaysia was a big exporter of rubber and producing. That's why the eraser came into place initially, and then later on the evolution went into other products. Similarly, for our other factories like in Brazil or Indonesia, where they have a lot of forests and trees, and therefore these were the bases where the factories focused on pencils and color pencils. So for each of the site, there is a specific availability of raw materials and also skill sets of people in that area that made it feasible for them to start manufacturing processes. So if you go from factory to factory, you find that there is a specialization. So it's not a whole overlap. Now, the stationery industry is not super huge. It's not like selling shampoo, for example. So what we try to do is we want to optimize the capacity in each of the factories. And therefore, that's why, like in Malaysia, we export to all the rest of the countries and try to utilize the productivity in the factories.
Wood, rubber and graphite, those would be your main raw materials at the factory. How have you been impacted by commodity prices?
Commodity prices, of course, has been very high during the pandemic period, plus also logistics costs to move, and along with the Suez Canal issue and container issue, where a lot of containers were stuck in China. and not circulating out in the market, that has drove our cost of business way higher. At the same time, for at least in Faber-Castell, Malaysia, we have a lot of other cost-saving initiatives that we put in place so that we try to balance up in terms of our margins to ensure that we don't burden our consumers by so much in terms of price increases. So, for example, we have the solar panel that we put up on our roof, and that saves us about 400,000 ringgit a year. So that is a lot of money, and that helps to buffer against the rising costs.
So you haven't had to hike prices, review prices at any time since the pandemic started?
Actually, we had to. However, the quantum of price increase was not as high as per what we would have to if we had not had these cost-saving initiatives in place.
Roughly, what was the quantum like, the increase?
The increase were in the high single digits, about 5 to 7%.
I want to talk about your sustainability because your pencils are wood-cased pencils.
That's right.
You grow about 20 cubic meters of wood every hour, which corresponds to around one lorry load. You also proudly declare that the wood comes from sustainably managed forests. And I'm super fascinated by the fact that you guys own forests in southeast Brazil that capture about 900,000 tons of CO2. Are these efforts enough?
We look at sustainability in several buckets. One is, of course, raw materials, the wood, as you've already mentioned. Right now, for all the wood, it's 100% sustainable wood. So that's one part of what we're doing. But we also have other materials such as plastics. And very interestingly, of course, in Malaysia, we use a lot of plastics in our factory because we manufacture the ballpoint pens and gel pens. Well, what we have been doing is that we have been working with the recycled plastics where we are getting recycled plastics, and we have launched new pens that are fully recycled plastics. For example, EcoGel and our text highlighters and marker pens, we are also moving into recycled plastics. But we have faced an issue because recycled plastics, the supply is quite limited, and at the same time, everyone's looking for recycled plastics to drive their ESG agenda. So what we have been looking into is we are looking at research with some of the local universities and looking into the bio-based and biodegradable materials as a start to eventually phase out plastics altogether. The second part of the thing that we're looking at is also in the packaging. More than 50% of our products have already been moved out of plastic packaging to paper-based recycled paper. So that's another area that we're looking at. And finally, in terms of energy, in Malaysia, of course, with the solar panel that caters to about 30 to 40% of our energy requirements, we also buy from the government. There is this green energy tariff the government has recently launched, or rather a year ago, of which we buy. Now, being green is not cheap, so we have to pay an additional about 11% higher for this electricity. But we want to do our part in this area because as we do this, we encourage all the other solar farms and hydroelectric power plant producers to continue to build capacity. And eventually, I hope that most of the energy that's in our grid today will come from these sources.
Andrew Woon, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with the Managing Director of Faber-Castell Malaysia, Indochina and East Asia, Andrew Woon. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Keith Kam for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. 5G now with you.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.